Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
As a parent, when you take your children to the pediatrician, you have to have this complete trust in your pediatrician. I know that I do. I love my pediatrician. Sometimes, though, they would recommend a test or a medication or antibiotics, or you want antibiotics, and you're not sure if all of these things are not only necessary, but recommended or needed. So we're going to talk today about medical tests and procedures that are commonly recommended but may not always be necessary. My guest is Dr. Paul Kaplowitz. He's a pediatric endocrinologist and the AAP physician champion for choosing wisely. Dr. Kaplowitz, I'm so glad to have you join us today. And as a parent of two teens, I feel this. I have felt it before. Let's start by setting the stage. Tell us what choosing wisely is.
Well, back in 2011, the American Board of Internal Medicine was thinking about ways that physicians themselves could address the issue of overuse of diagnostic testing and certain treatments that were not of proven benefit. And they started choosing wisely as a way to get physicians more involved in the issue of reducing our cost of unnecessary medical care, which by some estimates is as high as 30% in the U.S. And the strategy that they used was to partner with physician organizations such as the AAP and the AMA, but many special groups of specialty physicians, and to try to get each group to come up with lists of five tests and procedures that they feel should be questioned. And so as of now, there are 80 partnering organizations and a very large number of of items that are published where they're accessible to both people in the medical field and to parents. Now, I have to admit that many of these items involve the care that's delivered once a patient is already in the hospital, and there's some debate as to, you know, which x-rays or which blood tests or which treatments are appropriate. But in a discussion today, I would want to focus on more outpatient issues, issues that, you know, parents are more likely to be involved in making a decision as to whether to do a test or a treatment. So that's the background. And, you know, I think there have been some successes. Many lists have been published. Whether or not this is actually, you know, contributing to lower usage of questionable medical care is not been resolved yet.
Well, then let's talk for parents about the tests that you're talking about. And I understand that there may be too many for us to go over today, but one that I have gone through recently myself is an MRI. My daughter was experiencing headaches. And right away, that's where a parent's mind goes to. Oh, well, she's got to have an MRI, make sure it's not a brain tumor. Tell us the tests that you find are the most, whether it's under-recommended, overused, unnecessary. Is that one of the ones on the list that I just mentioned?
The use of MRIs for headaches is not currently on the list, but I'm familiar with it and I can address it. There are, I think the most important consideration in evaluating a child for headache is a good history and a physical exam, because the vast majority of headaches do not reflect serious medical conditions. They may be tension headaches, they may be migraines, but they're not something that's going to show up in an MRI. The proportion of headaches that are actually due to brain tumors is extremely small. And I think what a good physician or specialist would need to discuss with a parent is what we call the red flags. In other words, you know, headaches that have been going on for a long time that occur, you know, in the evening, that, you know, they come and go, those are not likely, you know, but they're not getting more severe. Those are not likely to be something that an MRI would help with. Where an MRI helps is if you have headaches that are becoming both more intense and more frequent over a period of time, and particularly if they're occurring at night and waking the child from sleep. So those are specific situations where an MRI would be necessary. But, you know, a similar debate occurs on whether to do MRIs for patients who come to an emergency room after, you know, some head trauma. And I don't want to go over them in great detail, but there are specific guidelines that have been developed that will allow parents and ER doctors to decide this is not a serious head trauma. It can just be watched, you know, monitored. The child can be sent home, or this is serious enough that a MRI is necessary. So, you know, MRIs and CT scans of the head are definitely an overused procedure, and not just overused and expensive, but, you know, particularly with CT scans, there's a radiation exposure, and, you know, the more radiation a child is exposed to, the higher the risk of later cancers. So there's a good reason, not just for cost, but for safety, to limit MRIs for headaches and brain and head injuries.
Well, and I can imagine that concussions is another one, parents, you know, and you pretty much just went over that type of situation where they say, well, should we do imaging, see if there's a brain bleed? I mean, parents, Dr. Kaplowitz, we worry about every little thing. Tell us the tests with Choosing Wisely that you would say to a parent, you know, this may not be necessary. We did just talk about CAT scans and MRIs. What else are we talking about here?
Well, I'll give you an example from my field of pediatric endocrinology. One of the largest reasons for referral to people in my field is short stature. And the truth is that the vast majority of kids with short stature do not need a medical workup, particularly if they're healthy and they're growing at the lower, you know, ends of the normal range, but they're not falling off their curve and they don't have any symptoms suggestive of a chronic illness. And, you know, I think that so often patients come in to see a specialist and they expect, you know, a whole bunch of tests. And, you know, the standard tests that are often done for short stature run well over $1,000. And at least one study has shown that they are very low yield. So a good history and physical and, you know, making sure the child is not leveling off in their growth is important in terms of reassuring parents. And sometimes parents are just concerned because, well, gosh, they're average in height or maybe even tall, and why should my child be at the fifth percentile? There must be a reason, and, you know, maybe growth hormone is needed. And so I think one of the things that we're trying to do is to convince parents and primary care providers, as well as specialists, is to reassure the majority of these, you know, parents of short kids and not order a whole bunch of tests. Because one of the problems with ordering tests is that if you order enough tests, you'll often find one test that's mildly abnormal, but it has nothing to do with the symptom, the problem that you're trying to address. But because you have this abnormal test, sometimes it leads to further testing and referrals to, you know, further physicians that add cost and anxiety but don't add value.
Wow, that was a great explanation. And as someone who's 4'10" and shrinking, I imagine that, you know, my parents might have looked at that back then, but maybe not. And so what else? Because there are so many things, and even if children have maybe chronic pain, you know, the opioid epidemic is huge. And, you know, whether they should be getting a pap smear younger or the ages, all of these things now have recommendations and guidelines. So what would you like parents to know?
I mean, you know, there are certain things that, you know, are not worth arguing about. If the doctor wants to do a complete blood count, I mean, that's a fairly low-cost procedure. It may not be indicated, but, you know, there's no point. But, you know, any test that involves radiation, you know, x-rays, you know, I think the parents should feel free to ask, is there good evidence that this test, you know, particularly if the, you know, obviously if you've banged up your arm and, you know, playing sports, you need an x-ray. But, you know, there are many situations where, you know, x-rays are not indicated. You know, one example that comes from the Choosing Wisely is there's a situation called intowing gait, and it's usually mild intowing. The item says is usually a normal phenomenon reflecting ongoing maturation of the skeleton, and it tends to improve with age. And so there's a specific, you know, recommendation: don't order x-rays or advise bracing or surgery for a child who's less than 8 years old with intowing gait. You know, another example of a situation where you know, physicians are often very anxious to refer patients to a specialist is, you know, all children have blood pressures done at every visit, and sometimes the blood pressure, you know, is somewhat elevated, and this often leads to a referral or you know, outpatient testing, EKG, or you know, or lab tests. And you know, when the child gets referred to another physician, in a good proportion of the time, the blood pressure is normal. So, and part of the problem is that, you know, the method of doing blood pressure can, you know, give you a lot of false positive readings, and particularly because kids are anxious, you know, in a medical setting, you know, you may have a falsely high reading just because, you know, you're seeing a doctor. So the guidelines that are in place specifically recommend that you should repeat the blood pressure 3 times at the same visit and at 2 additional visits to document persistent blood pressure elevation before doing a workup for pediatric hypertension. So, you know, what we want to do is decrease, you know, referrals for things that, you know, may not be real and may reflect one, you know, one or two abnormal measurements but are not real medical problems.
This time of year, it's hard to avoid getting sick, whether it's a common cold or the stomach bug. It's crucial to stay well hydrated. Hydrolyte is a great-tasting clinical hydration product that contains the correct balance of sodium, glucose, and water to rapidly replace fluids and electrolytes. Hydrolyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade, and is available as a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or effervescent tablets that you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolyte in the digestive aisle at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. Visit Hydrolyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. That's Hydrolyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. So as we wrap up, doctor, just tell parents what you would like them to know about using Choosing Wisely for any of their questions, and how they can have this discussion with their pediatricians. Really the most important points you'd like us to, you know, take away from this.
Well, first of all, parents should know that Choosing Wisely items are available on, you know, on the internet. And if you, you know, do a list search for choosing wisely and pediatrics, or choosing wisely and AAP, you'll get several lists. Now, you know, and you can look at these lists according to specialty. So if you're, you know, visiting an endocrinologist, you can certainly see what items are, you know, on the list. The problem with that approach, you know, of looking, you can also look by keyword. You can go to the list and type in a keyword and see if there are any recommendations. So the problem is that these lists do not cover just a small fraction of issues that parents may encounter when they go to a pediatrician. And so to rely purely on choosing wisely lists as to when to question, you know, whether a test or a procedure is necessary is not, you know, always helpful. But I think parents should have, you know, when a pediatrician, you know, says, oh, you know, we need to, you know, at the first encounter says, oh, we need to order, you know, and lists, you know, 10 tests that need to be done. I think the parents should question that and say, well, you know, how likely is it that those tests are going to be helpful? And could we wait a while and see if the problem, you know, goes away and gets better before we, you know, start the testing process? And the other thing that parents should know is that, you know, when primary care physicians order tests and then send the child to a specialist, that you're going to tend to order far more tests than are actually necessary. And, you know, one thing that the parents, you know, if a decision has been made to send the child to a specialist, wait until a child sees a specialist and have them decide whether this is a normal variation and the parents need to be reassured, or whether it really needs targeted testing. Because many times the cost of the testing far exceeds what it costs, you know, to have the child seen by a specialist.
What great information. Dr. Kaplowitz, thank you so much for coming on, because parents, we really let our emotions, you know, rule our decisions, especially when it comes to our children's health. So thank you so much for coming on and telling us about choosing wisely. And you can listen to this show, Healthy Children, with the experts provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in conjunction with their consumer website, healthychildren.org. You can listen on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeart, anywhere podcasts are played, but we want you to listen at RadioMD.com. So for the American Academy of Pediatrics, Healthy Children, and RadioMD.com, I'm Melanie Cole. Stay well.